Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Fridays are split between Calling Into the Darks with Pam and Break On Through. Join Aphasiana and Babble on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. On Mondays, a split between The Hearts of L&T with Victoria and Chapters of the Blackface Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. Now, these shows are designed so you can call outside the line with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby opening up the envelope to expression and pushing through new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Rand. I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Rex.
What's up?
Oh, you know, same old, same old. Same day, different dollar, same day. I'm not sure, something like that. What's up with you?
Rainy weather.
Yeah, I get that. We've been having some nice cool weather. No rain, thank goodness. Although, actually, that would be nice to have because, you know, helps everything grow. But today we made it up to 64 degrees. So that was decent.
That's a summer day.
So all good. But, looking forward to hanging out with you. Maybe some other cool poets, you just never know, going to be on the agenda. And we got a great lineup of poetry. So, all right. And we're going to start out the show with some carryovers. This first one is a carryover from a Twisted Tuesdays show, Nolete Tamara by Colap. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Nolete Tamere by Colap. Let my words surge from my gut and splash across the jet black night. A lightning zipper bearing a message that no laws could gag, so they spring from the fountain of my inner core. I can only say what I see, and what I see can only be felt from the heart. Therefore, you cannot stop me from expressing that which flows so freely, that transcends petty mortals' material considerations and hovers high, soaring on an eagle's flight, unafraid to live or die. For what I articulate is something that cannot be disproved or dismantled. It is as sacred as a nod and a sigh, which words cannot convey, as golden as the silence of a wordless prayer on a full moon's night. And poem. All right. What you got, Pam? What you think?
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. She wrote to the poem Where the Mind is Without Fear. As always, I thought she had beautiful imagery and metaphors. I like how this is, the main message of this is putting aside your fears and openly expressing yourself. I really liked it all the way through, but for me, what really spoke to me was that second stanza, therefore you cannot stop me from expressing that which flows so freely that transcends petty mortals' material considerations and hovers high, soaring on an eagle's flight, unafraid to live or die. There's within those lines, there's a real idea of the strength and the spirituality of words, especially when, they're used without being afraid, with, just spoken as if they, it's such an expression of being true to yourself and to your own thoughts. so beautifully written and very well done.
Well, thanks. It also bites at the point of actually having the freedom to actually voice your thoughts, your feelings, your impressions of that which is, which some may or may not hold. But it walks in that knowledge that I do have that freedom to speak if so choose. So there's no fear in that moment. It's just a matter of letting the voice be heard.
Absolutely. That is a really good point there. Just a matter of letting the voice be heard. So, very cool. Very cool.
All right. We'll be going next.
All right. Up next, we have... yes, I did grab the next one. Okay. All right, up next we have Fuck It by Betty Page. Fuck it, love happy endings. I must be dreaming again, as if he'll forgive. I just won't let go. Fuck it, why do I still care? I'm lost in silence. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Betty went to, was it? Damage Incorporated is my favorite Metallica song. Fuck it all and fucking no regrets. Never happy ending on these dark sets. All fair for Damage Inc. You see stuff a little closer if you see. But that's kind of less happy ending. There is that note. Happy endings, I'll watch as well. That runs a few things. Massage parlors. Happy endings to you. Yeah. Thought to be dreaming again as if still forgive. Happy endings on movies. Those nice little tight little tidbits of, yes, this is what your life intimates to the fact that, hey, this is imagination. It's not reality. And unfortunate reality is, there aren't a whole lot of happy endings. But you got to live life. Life is real. And it's painful. And it can be joyous.
Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. Thought this was an excellent brevity. I like the straightforward style. I like that she does... remind us that we all love happy endings, but we all don't get them. And, I like the question, why do I still care? I'm lost. And then the end statement, I'm lost in silence. That's just very strong emotive lines and very well done.
Begging a question to an answer you already know.
Huh?
Begging for an answer to a question you've already answered.
Yep, exactly.
Onward.
All right. Up next, we have Into the Dreary Desert Sand of Dead Habit by Liquid Mind Forever. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Into the Dreary Desert Sand of Dead Habits, Liquid Mind Forever. Into the Dreary Desert Sand of Dead Habits, Rabindranath Tagore. The night was clear, and the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down, staggerly. Are you or anyone you know a bulldog hanging out on an orange slushy Saturday night? Waiting, remonstrating, menstruating, lifeless, dull eyes. You're a typical, hypothetical, epithetical, dazed, non-phased, melee, glazed, in dismal, dismay at the rope float shallow boat display of deranged mange? And are you or anyone you know an habitual drugstore cowboy living on welfare in the circumstantial dance of boogie nights, entranced in remonstrance, perchance demonstrating, almost compensating, fragmenting, fraternal, maternal, believing, relieving, grieving from your coffin of self-same, shame, capitalized, organized, corner of blame? That same old, moldy green, Limburger cheesy, sleazy hypotheses, where you get the drop-dead gorgeous gal or John Travolta to die for a guy vying or crying or dying for something remarkably different. Splish splash, I was taken aback, long about a Saturday night. Rub dubs, relaxing in a tub, thinking everything's all right. With maggoty faggots trashing, cigarette-stained teeth gnashing, rub dubbing, scrubbing scabs and sores, sameness, inanesses, ipso facto, fameless, whoredoms, jordoms, boredom. Do you like distinctive Old Spice cologne? Do you think there's nothing more than to own a two-tone nifty 55 T-Bird with skirts? And is your idea of a high time in the old town tonight a drive-in movie of On the Waterfront with the guy from the Wild Bunch motorcycle gang, Brando guy in black bomber jacket? Is Marlon your role model as you sit and bounce your toddler sucking down a poorly girl says the dog? Hey now, hey now. It's a finger pop popping time, finger popping popping time, and that's a real feel real good sign. Here comes Mary, here comes Sue, and here comes Johnny and Bobby too. While you're still swaying, still parlaying, still the same old game of sticky-laying fingers, fingers popping, popping time, by Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. Does your idea of great sex include feeling up the thigh-high skirt of Sadie Hawkins' queen, meanwhile sneaking a peek, having to fake, taking a leak to get a break from the same old day-old cold? Pussy you had for the last two semesters at your feet and repeat and deplete your banks of sperm as you squirm, too, like a worm in another term of chemistry 101? Oh, my love, my darling, I've hungered for your touch, a long and lonely night. And time goes by so slowly, and time can do so much. Are you still mine? The righteous brother. Do you dream of dying? Do you drink yourself into oblivion in front of the TV watching the Mets? Do you enjoy feeling sexy with an over-the-hill beer belly and smelly feet as you beat off in the John to the tune of Amazing Grace? I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. And what you see is the same old flabby tits and fiddly thighs as you buy the good old American dream. Bye-bye, Mr. American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Don McLean. And the night was clear, and the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two men who were gambling in the dark. Agalee. Come on, man. You know the corner. That's right. The corner. Thirsty first and vine, and that staggering, boring drink. Love potion number 9. As you lie defined in an outline, sublime, columbine, pantomime, where the upper 40 becomes the lame old, same old, lower 40, hoity-toity. On a hill far away stands an old rugged cross, a symbol of suffering pain, by Alan Jackson. Are you still jumping out of bed and hoping to find a party going on? Do you throw up at the sight of an old spice bottle on the shelf, out of the line to carry home, and bring you to the wealth you never could find behind the dead lifeless mound of land you've been paying for since Hector was a pup, and Hector's been dead so long no one can remember when he lived or how he died, except to say, when we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, there's no more days of this malaise than the bulldog still standing on the corner on a slushy orange Saturday night in the same old town, rub-dubbing, relaxing in a tub, deranged with mange. Pray for us, Jesus. And pump. All right, Pam.
Great read there, Rick. Yeah, well, this is powerful imagery and metaphors all the way through. I like the historical and cultural references, especially the abundance of musical ones, different songs mentioned. Yeah, I just, kind of felt in general it spoke about the ugliness of society and the idea of putting on a fake pretense as a great right and very well done.
Well, there's some great lines in here. We said, are you or anyone you know an habitual drugstore cowboy living on welfare in the circumstantial dance of boogie nights? I like that. And that same old moldy green Limburger cheesy sleazy hypotheses. Will you get the drop dead gorgeous gal or John Travolta to die for guy, vying for crying for guy for something remarkably different? And is that nice bite of dipping into music and the movies and wishing for something else other than what you consider a fetid existence that you're bottled into because you settled or you thought you got the one, but the one turned out to be the bum, and now you're regretting the age that just slips by ever so slowly, and what you see, the ugliness all the way around, and it's not quite like the movies or the music, and nothing ever comes true.
Very true, very true.
There's way too many lines in here to hit on everything in the moment. It does bite it.
Huh.
Oh yes, living in that dream world where nothing kind of hits the right, and you're watching life pass you by.
Yep.
Almost a bored suburban housewife motif on that one. What you got next?
I already commented.
I know. I said, what you got next?
Oh, I thought you said, what do you got, Pam? All right. Up next, we have Finding Ethics by Garanoi. And it goes like this. Finding ethics in between the lines on how to break the rules. Seize the day when something wicked your way comes. Obedience is for fools. Wide-eyed and innocent, set on doing good, remember the road to hell is paved with good intent. Grown in deception's open hand, stolen by the gun barrels of belief, to make delusions of a faith preaching to hide in truth the beauty of the starting point. Interrupting words of stolen innocence to pay the price of the game in the blood of integrity when something wicked comes. End poem.
Great read, Pam. It's an interesting mix of lines. There was an obedience is for fools, wide-eyed and innocent, that I'm doing good. Remember the road to hell is paved with good intent. And what was it? Pay the price of the game, the blood of integrity ones. Let's see, finding ethics in between the lines of how to break the rules. They kind of play off itself. You either walk an easy, righteous path, or you look for the easy way in getting that which you want. And there's always a note to hit on that line by Shakespeare. By the pricking of my thumb, something wicked this way comes. Seize a day when something wicked your way comes. And did it again with the font. In the blood of integrity when something wicked comes. There is that note, hey, you either have the ethics or you don't. You either follow the line where the rules are concerned or you don't. And if you don't, ethics really don't matter because you're not looking for them in the first place. You've already given them up. The idea is which end of that line do you you land on? Are you obedient in the nature of ethics? Because ethics does play a role when it comes to certain job lines. You need ethics as a doctor. You need ethics as a psychiatrist. You need ethics as a priest and a lawyer. the judge. And a lot of the time, the lines get blurred, and you end up walking over those lines, and you're no longer doing that which you're supposed to be doing, which is following the rule of what is what you're bound to in that particular job. What about you?
Great comment there, Rex. Yeah, I like the way that he put together different, things. And by the way, we did get into the now into Hemingway inspired rights. I like how. What do I like? How do I phrase that? I like. I like how this is kind of like a quilt type write, made up of different cliches, phrases, like put together, like the preaching to hide in truth. Where was that? There's some of it, like paved. Oh yeah, the road to hell is paved with good intent. Like, you know, it's kind of glued together by those lines that we all recognize with individual lines of his own. I really like grown in deception's open hand, stolen by the gun barrels of belief to make delusions of a faith. I like the idea of the hypocrisy in that, those lines of, like as you were mentioning, the all different kinds of jobs that ethics are needed for. Although, realistically, I think most jobs ethics are needed unless you belong to the mafia. And
I'm just talking about jobs that particular job depends on the ethics, where the rules are bound within a strict framework that if you step outside those lines, you've really screwed up.
Ah, yes. But still, you do need ethics for every job, but there's not necessarily as big of a consequence. You're right. There's not necessarily as big of a consequence, but you still do need ethics in all areas of life. So, really good point there, Rex. Yeah, that was an excellent write and very well done. So... And I'd like to welcome Jeremy to the show. Welcome, Jeremy. How's it going?
The Riffer is in the house.
Great, guys. Always fun to hang with you both. You know I can't resist. How you both doing?
Well, you've been riffing on the page for a while, so expected to see you.
Yeah, I got caught up behind the fence. There was an extra jello shot hanging back there, and I got distracted. But I'm here late. Better late than never, right?
Absolutely. Would you like to comment on that poem?
Let me catch up. Let's move on to the next. I'm a half step behind.
Sure, no problem. All right. But yeah, that was a great write by Garanway. Very, very clever. All right. I'm going to grab the next poem. Let me see if I can find something here that I'm looking for. All right, here we go. All right. Up next, we have Damned If You Do, Damned If You Don't, by Eric Svensson, and we have a recording for that, so here we go.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Catatonic curveball reticence. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Thoughts cauldron condense. Terse resistance gathers storm clouds. Twister resistance tortures fingers. Helter-skelter, hurricanes howl, cry wolf or cringe, step up, step out, mind meniscus reaches breaking point, say it loud, say it clear, take the mic, be the mechanics. In the living years, won't be prisoner to all my father held so dear, won't be hostage to all his hopes and fears, crumpled bits of paper filled with imperfect thoughts, stilted conversations. I'm afraid that's not good enough. Hemingway's Euro journey still inspires. Quarrels open up between the past and the present. Future sacrifice. Gallstone bitterness lasts. Don't give up, don't give in. Say it loud, say it clear. It's too late when we die. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, ties that bind, blood bone and DNA double helix, hologram, telegram, anagram, cufflinks, serviettes and overcoats, darling Mary Poppins with her brolly, violets, ventriloquist, Eliza Doolittle, elocution is better than electrocution. Round and round we go until one fine day we decide to end the blame game. Wholeheartedly accept that each generation did their best. Say it loud, say it clear. Be decadent, darlings. Listen as well as you hear. It's too late when you die, to admit we don't see eye to eye. High road or low road, choice is yours, darling. Be decadent. Say with Rumi, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for the style crowd. It is very much appreciated. And Jeremy, you're the last one in the room. Why don't we start with you?
Well, there's so much I want to say about this. This is a really great write. I mean, we can all agree that Eric always takes us on a ride, but this one took me on several different avenues. Let me see if I can touch on them all as this is read. First of all, his love for language definitely shines through, and it's fun to get caught up in the sounds of everything that he puts together, but he stays on point by doing it. I often find that when I try to do what Eric accomplished here with all of the sounds, the assonance, the rhyme, the alliteration, you lose meaning. But in this poem, I felt an underlying vein that stayed true throughout. It's funny in the title where it says, damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's a defeatist feeling to it. But this has such an inspiring theme to the entire poem of say what needs to be said, write what needs to be written. Especially when you're dealing with something hard that might be family ties and which you might want to bite your tongue because of all the feelings and all the heavy layers that are intrinsic with familial relations. And so overall, I was inspired. I was inspired to put out there what I feel needs to be put out. And this is the kind of poem that makes you want to write more. And it makes you want to express your feelings, whether it's personal in a conversation or whether it's artistic. In terms of lines, I really loved the one where he said, elocution better than electrocution. I think that kind of says it all. But Eric, always been a fan. This one in particular is really a spectacular poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeremy. All right, Pam, what you got? Unmute. I'll get into it now. I don't know if anybody else knows, but I hit a hit on a number of notes from music to movies, as well as the books as well. You got a Twister in that first stanza, Helter Skelter. Thought, I like that mind meniscus reach breaking point, that touch of the twist of mentality right there. And then right at the finish, take the mic, be the mechanic, Mike and the Mechanics. And then offering up the double thought in the father, won't be prison for my father, Elsa dear. I like that double angle of not just his father, so to speak, but God in that moment. And then what else? I like the thought with a gallstone bitterness last. There is a almost a note to Hemingway's last days in that line itself, especially with don't give up, don't give in, stay loud, stay clear. It's too late when we die. There's a note of finality right there. What else we got? Dropping in Mary Poppins, Eliza Doolittle. I too like that thought, elocution, better than electrocution. That was a nice touch. But the bottom end of this, stay with Rumi. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field. I will meet you there. There's a notice of we can talk. You don't have to yell at each other. There is middle ground always somewhere. Sit down, chat, and come to terms, so to speak. And I thought that was a great finish. Pam, you back?
She's not back yet. That's okay. I really like what you said about the touches on the music on all that. I caught the mic and the Mechanics, but that's the one that I really caught on. And then Rumi there at the end, I thought it was a really neat nod. And I'm sitting here looking him up to understand more about Rumi, but I like what you picked up on that, Rex.
Well, there was also that right in the middle, round and round we'd go until one fine day we'd decide to end the blame game, wholeheartedly accept each generation did their best. The blame game. That seems to be such a heavy-handed, it's your fault. No, it's your fault. It's gotten to the point where the divide is so large that it's almost like looking for middle ground in the middle of a haystack and not finding that middle ground because nobody's willing to give a little bit. No, it's all or nothing. And there's a nice touch. I like that thought with the serviette thrown in there too. You don't see that very often. There's a nice old world word that has gotten kind of lost. Yes, it's napkins now. Well, they used to call it serviette, and they were quite well. And the high and the low road, what about the middle road?
Yeah, that's a great point, because there is no middle road anymore. And that's a great point that you pick up on social commentary and what's going on these days. Cool insight, Rex. I really like that.
Well, Erica always gives us a little bit of crypticism that you got to walk inside. You're playing with us a little bit. I like that. And the ease of everything that rolls out today where, a lie goes around the earth in milliseconds twice before the truth actually comes out. And then the truth never gets believed anyway. So it's kind of a like the title said, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But if you don't bother to make the table to begin with, then you're all done. Nothing gets accomplished at that point. Not that one. Put it on the board.
Well, if you'd like to do a little song or something for intermission, I'm all ears, buddy.
Well, I am back, just so you know.
You're saved. You're saved, Rex. You're saved.
Oh. I just put up the piece, too. Well, all right, then. Shall we move on? Well, you didn't get to comment on Eric's piece.
Go ahead and move on.
thought we've got Righteous Fog by R. Byron. And I guess, Jeremy, you can do that one. I think, yes.
You bet. Writer's Fog by R. Byron. Bleeding drops of crimson gray night darkness like a canopy covering my early flower, now an old russet root garden of broken branches. Peeking deep into darkness stamped on darkest things. As a thinker, long I sailed. It was many years ago, infinity shrinking down like light. Now dry as sawdust in the night, the waves wash ashore once more. An old sea dog with blinding eye, yet I ride. I hobble to the finish, the hooves of many beats. Still I dream away, my loss, my lines, in caverns too deep like hills where fear is a thing like an anchor, dripping to the bottomless shipwreck, a thing of sweetness, writing, if not for dying. The mermaids of the sea weep, still I love thee, my rosewood lost, harsh winds blow, a wintry day, into a dwelling of a nameless face. The sea is the harshest at high tide, when the moon and I are full of regrets. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. And R took the prompt, there is nothing to write in. All you do is sit at a typewriter and breathe. All right, Pam, you get first look.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty clever. I like how he took a lot of the kind of like adventure, like, you know, like in Hemingway's stories, there's always a lot of kind of adventure going on. And I feel like he really captured that with little tidbits here and there, like the old sea dog with blinding eye. I like the obviously the title really sets the tone, Writer's Fog. I think we've all been there, done that. I like peeking deep into darkness, stamped on darkest things, a thinker long I sailed. It was many years ago, infinity shrinking down like light. Just such a real sense of really trying to search for the right words at the right moment. I like how he brings mythology into it. The mermaid of the sea weeps, still I love thee, my rosewood lost, harsh winds blow a wintry day. Wonderful imagery there and just very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. All right, Jeremy, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, Pam, I really like that you use the word adventure because, yeah, we've all experienced the titled subject of Writer's Fog. But looking at it as an adventure, like it is exemplified in this extended metaphor, kind of gives you that will to want to fight through it. And I really like how it ends, when the moon and I are full of regrets, because it is a regretful feeling. It's a regretful feeling that you can't champion through when you're in that humbled feeling of not being able to – the self-doubt, I guess, the writer's fog of self-doubt and not being able to perform. It's the worst. And so I like that it's an adventure, and you're kind of, again, this is another inspiring feeling that you should look at it as a challenge. And I like the fact that there is that hope or that adventure, that feeling of championing something that is that many times feels like an insurmountable hill to climb.
Nice. That's the journey. I'm going to go with something a little bit different. The Writer's Fog fit. But it also fits for a second reason. It isn't just about being lost in the moment. It's all about ruining age as age sets in. As he hits on a couple of notes. It was many years ago, infinity shrinking down like light, and now an old rusted root, garden of broken branches. There's a notice that the winding down of the body and the mentality itself, now dry as sawdust in the night. The waves wash ashore once more. There's a little bit of knowing in the moment. An old sea dog with blinding eye, yet I ride. I hobble to the finish. The hoofs of many beat. The struggle in the moment. And I do like that next one. Now, still I dream away. My lost my line in caverns too deep like hills, where fear is a thing like an anchor, dripping to a bottomless shipwreck, a thing of sweetness writing, if not for dying. That's a nice tone of thought right in there. And the back end, that mermaid of the seaweed, there's that notion of actually meeting that challenge. And still, when the moon and I are full of regrets, there is that notation when those words don't come. You can't bleed that note in the moment on the typewriter. And that's the regret angle. But it does point to that notice of realizing age has its limitations, and it can take something away from mentality, especially if you get into other things along the way. All right, Pam, back to you.
Great observations there, Rex. So up next we have Speaking, Thinking, Drinking by Wichita Rick. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Speaking, Thinking, and Drinking by Wichita Rick. Thinking and drinking. Life's knowledge taken from any avenue, some sweat equity or upper college. Courtesy, easier to hide in writing. Voices carry many tones. Simple clatter, rising levels grow as the beverages flow. More we imbibe, the less we subscribe to Emily Post. Wisdom and manners begin to blend with verbal garbage. Tongue twisters become more tasteless as the head gets more wasted. Uncaring, we become part of the local show. More we drink, the less we think. Simple minds make companions easiest. Tomorrow far off behind that mental blockage. Did Hemingway think he would make a future AA quote? Wonder if his liver were about to quiver or the blood alcohol levels were about to overflow. Speaking, thinking, and drinking can become a mess in a sentence. If mixed the wrong way, they might require bail. Be cautious what you wish for under the mistletoe. Will we recall to hold back the words the next happy hour? Or, as always, a few ounces will have us hollering like it was our last rodeo. And oh. Jeremy, we'll start with you, please.
Yeah, I'm diving into the author's note at the very bottom of this, and I really like this. Always be sober where you say you do drunk. Yeah, Rick, I dig this. I mean, I dig this from the very beginning, in which there's the attempt at the very beginning to make it applicable to everyone, the sweat equity or the upper college. And then from there, it's just kind of a cautionary tale. And I like everyone deals with it differently, right? Everyone acts differently when they let down all of those barriers by drinking or any kind of anything that inhibits them from speaking the way that they would free-flowingly, I guess is the best way to put it. And I like how this kind of puts kind of a discerning eye on all of that. And it's almost a cautionary tale, but it's also encouraging the masses to let the words fly as well. So I think it's different. It's an individual basis. But I think what Rick says is there's a way to embrace the fact that everyone has the ability to be beautiful in what they say, and letting go of all those inhibitions can be beautiful if under the right light is how I kind of interpret all this. But I dug it, Rick. For someone that definitely isn't afraid to drink, I'm with you on this one.
Thank you, Jeremy. All right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like how you mentioned the individuality of the right, Jeremy, and also how it's a cautionary tale. I have to agree, it is a cautionary tale, and I like that it's such done with that nice dash of humor. The more we imbibe, the less we subscribe to Emily Post. Wisdom and manners begin to blend with verbal garbage. I really like the nod to Emily Post. I also really liked the bite in the lines. Did Hemingway think he would make a future AA quote? Wonder if his liver were about to quiver on the blood alcohol levels were about to overflow. You know, just an excellent nod to the quote, to Hemingway. You know, and I just really, really think this is an excellent write on the whole idea of how it can oftentimes benefit us to stay sober. I have to say one more line I really enjoyed. It was, be cautious what you wish for under the mistletoe. It makes me think of the whole idea of the coyote ugly waking up and wanting to chew off your arm so you can get out from underneath that person that looks so much worse in the daylight. But, you know, just fun, clever, makes a great point in certain lines, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Great comments, you too. I did too. I like that thought with what was it, the Emily Post angle. That was a nice touch, but also the one before that, courtesy, easy to hide in writing, voices carry many tones, simple clatter rising levels grow as the beverages flow. There is that notation, you lose your inhibitions once the alcohol gets into the mind, and there is that note, yes, the thought to madness does go out the window. And I'm wondering if this wasn't not only just a thought to the quote itself, but to, as a nod to Hemingway. He was such a larger-than-life figure that he was brash. He was loud, boisterous. He became the show, so to speak, down in Key West and in Cuba. There was always something going on around him to the point that maybe somewhere down the line he started believing in all that angle of thought as to who and what he was, and that helped lead him into the angles of where he was later in life. He wasn't performing like he used to, and the thought of how he ended was that final that thought of you know what, I don't have anything left to say, so it might be easiest to not remain in a world where I can't actually impart that which I had once had in my mind to a page anymore. So I was wondering about that, because that last one, will we recall the whole back towards the next happy hour, or as always, a few apps will have us falling like it was a last rodeo. It's that idea of the finishing note to a life lived hard and boisterously. Nicely done, Doug. Thank you. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
Smokey. All right. Up next, we have Stuck in a Wicked Game by Darkened Aura. And it goes like this.
Eric. Or Sloppy Joe's.
All right. Stuck in a Wicked Game by Darkened Aura. Wicked games played on my heart, innocent illness from the start. Time goes by, no notes of change. They think it will, I find it strange. Pushing me further into the dark, innocent minds being marked. Squeezing every ounce of air, anxiety asphyxiating me without a care. Switching thoughts are racing by, some are loud and wonder why. Why do we have to go through such pain just in order to remain? Need to be stuck with wicked pay for my innocence to stay. End poem.
Well, this kind of hits on a sort of mentality, and how it can be illuminating and debilitating. You hit on that. Wicked games played in my heart, innocent illness from the start. Time goes by, no notes of change. They think it will, I find it strange. It's kind of a note of maybe a misdiagnosis early in life, and the change hasn't really happened. That's been the sand that walks in, pushing me further into the dark, innocent mind being marked, and asphyxiation. There's that cloying notation of being stuck inside oneself without having the air to breathe properly. So it's kind of like being shut in mentally without being able to express oneself properly and find a way out of that, what is kind of a maze in and of itself. That's been done there, Don. And Pam, how about you?
Did you say my name?
Yeah.
All right. I was trying to try out these headphones in hopes that I can actually hear you better. So, but that didn't work. Let's see here. I don't know. Can you have Jeremy comment?
Sure.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, no problem. No, I think that was an interesting take, Rex. I didn't pick up that it was an inner struggle as much. I mean, stuck in a wicked game, I from the beginning I thought of the Chris Isaac song. And in the first line when it says, wicked games played on the heart. So I thought instead of this being more of an internal struggle, I thought this was more of the wicked game of romance and someone that has to go through the painful relationships. Especially in the third when it says, switching thoughts are racing by. And I wonder why do we all have to go through such pain in order just to remain? So it seems like a lesson of heartbreak that everyone seems to experience. And so I thought the wicked game was the fact that there's always these relationships or these loves that have some kind of ending always. And you just feel, like it says in the second, anxiety asphyxiating me without a care. There's no pain worse than love that comes to an end, whether you're the cause or you're the recipient of something that you want to continue. So I thought it was more of an external influence more than an internal, but I liked your take on it totally, Rex, on how you saw it a different way. Either way, The Wicked Game, yeah, I thought it was a very, very intelligent poem. I enjoyed it.
That interpretation works, too. I like it. Thanks, Jeremy. All right, Pam, you ready now?
Yes. Well, I like what you both had to say. I don't have a third interpretation. I think this is a well-written poem, great rhyme. I like the anxiety asphyxiating me without a care. I like that she brings up the physical reaction to anxiety. Switching thoughts are racing by. Some are loud and wonder why. And you know, to me, it really does like have that whole feeling of having a panic attack, of being stuck in a never-ending circle of just not really fully being able to accept the way things are. And excellent write and very well done.
Oh, thank you very much, Sam. All right. Where do you want to go next?
All right, let me see here. Can't remember if I grabbed the next one, so let me go ahead and do that. And all right, here we go. All right. Up next, we have Goodbye Note by R.E. Ray and Jeremy. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Good night, Note 33 by R.E. Ray. I sign my name under always. It's not what's said, but what we do. We don't like each other sober. What's more important than what we want? But what's more important than the want? Know this, I will always love you, and I will remember what you've said. I wouldn't have loved you less if you'd told me to go sooner. I do love you more, and I do love you drunk, is to truly love you. Trust that truth. You love me against your will. There's nothing new to learn or teach. The fool The fool me said one time to you, I was drinking by the fire to get lit. I believe I couldn't keep you. We both knew why. It was your tongue, the red wine around your mouth. You kept me from keeping mine shut. End poem.
Great read, Jeremy. And stop the prompt right up there in the picture. Always do drunk what you said you always do sober what you said you do drunk. That will teach you to keep your mouth shut. I don't like that. If you read the last word of each line straight down, you actually get that quote. I like that thought too. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, first of all, I really think R.E. Ray ought to have, like, all 33 of his goodbye note on a list. I mean, because I'm assuming there's 32 more. I could be wrong. But great read there, Jeremy. And, you know, I really like how the main message of this is, of course, the idea of two people who really were only right for each other when they were drunk, who could only really tolerate each other when they were drunk. I thought this had some wonderful lines and imagery. I do love you more, and to love you drunk is to truly love you. I thought it's that kind of idea that they say you're at your most honest when you're drunk. I was drinking by the fire to get lit. I believed I couldn't keep you. We both know why. It was your tongue, the red wine around your mouth. You know, I think to me it just really speaks to the idea of two people who had to let go of each other because they were just bad for each other. There was not a supportive environment. It was the only way they were supportive to each other is the idea that they were really made to be drinking buddies and with benefits, I assume, and nothing more. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Liam. And Jeremy, you got to read it. How about you?
I like that you're assuming that there's benefits involved, Pam. this is a really cool poem. I mean, I like what you said. I think you had some very valid points in there, Pam, and I think it was a great interpretation of all of it. In terms of the feel of it all, it seems like it is – it's obviously directed at an individual, and it seems like a very personal and autobiographical write, especially in the parenthetical, we both know why. I like when poems intimate that something different or something deeper is going on, but it kind of lets you have enough of a peek that you already know the story even without going through and going letter by letter on exactly what the whole story is. So I understand what Pam was saying, that there's a relationship here. And I feel like we're drawn into it, and it lets you kind of feel those feelings that of the pain that went into this. I also like how it's formatted and the fact that it's like individual, punchy thoughts. There's a lot of periods in all of this, and it is kind of like that drunk conversation in which you just throw out really quick one-liners, really poignant feelings that have a beginning and an end very succinctly. And so I think that really felt in line with the tone of the entire poem. Very cool.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeremy. Funny thing is, I thought Bukowski with this. It has that same intonation with the drinking angle and what they get into and the fact that they can't get along. And there's an understanding there. But it reminds me of one piece he had about letting someone he cared for go to Europe. He didn't want her to go, but he let her go anyway. And they wrote for a while. Just kind of hit me with that kind of angle. Understanding the need of her going, but not wanting to allude the fact that actually needed her and wanted her to stay. And that thought about it was your tongue, the red wine around your mouth. You kept me from keeping mine shut. The idea of she was the one that got him to open up more, actually run his voice a little thicker than he might have thought. So, nicely done, Ari. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. Coming back your way.
All right. Well, I'm always glad to – I was glad to see R.E. inspired to write for this show. I really very much appreciate and enjoy his writing. And great observations there, Rex. Jeremy, you know how you can tell when I'm – what's that?
Rick hit on the same thought. Love you more and I love you drunk. Truly love you. Trust that. That's what kind of caught me in the thought with Bukowski.
Yeah. There you go. I'll let you in on a little secret, Jeremy. You know how you can tell when I'm really off on my comments? I'll tell you.
Do tell.
Okay, here's the tell. If Rex says, "Wow, thank you, Pam." That's like a Southern woman politely telling somebody they're an idiot.
Not at all.
I couldn't resist. Hey, I'm sorry.
I feel like I just got dissed, and I don't know why.
No, I think she was being self-deprecating. I don't think you were getting dissed, buddy. I think it was funny.
Well, it was a little bit of both. I was being self-deprecating, and I was dissing Rex.
Yeah, giving me a shit sandwich. Hey, don't knock it. Pretty soon you won't be getting peanut butter. They'll be gone from the shelves. Now this thing, it's got salmonella. They're really putting on a good show of making sure they want to kill us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I'm too poor to eat Jif peanut butter, so I don't have to worry about that.
You had pork chops and broccoli.
That's what I had for dinner tonight, pork chops and broccoli. Why, does that now have salmonella too?
No, that's more expensive than Jif.
Okay, but pork chops and broccoli are worth spending money on.
Yeah, at least you get to enjoy it. Peanut butter's nasty.
I don't know about that whole peanut butter. There's a lot of scary stuff out there right now, like monkeypox. I'm just trying to avoid monkeys.
That's what they say. You get monkeypox from pork chops. That's what they're saying on the news tonight.
Yeah,
and they're showing you pictures of monkeypox, except they didn't do their research. The pictures they're showing you of monkeypox is actually shingles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're playing games. They're running a fear porn campaign again because they want to lock everybody down again.
Oh, gee whiz.
One thing after another, I tell you.
No, it's not one thing. I keep telling you guys, they want us dead. They think we're impeding their use of their products. Like I told you, they want us on grass and locusts. We're not allowed to eat real food.
Well, I plan on keeping eating real food, especially as long as I have venison in the freezer.
If you got a gun, you can go hunt for your food. Yeah, try that, selling that to the inner city people. They'll be the first ones going out like zombies. They'll be on the streets cannibalizing themselves.
I tell you, Rex, you're just, you know, I like how well informed you are. I think
we should parlay this into a long conversation about Schrodinger's cat. Can I dive into that one again, please?
About what?
Schrodinger's cat.
Yes.
Yes, we are the experiment.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is a really good point there. Yeah, but Yeah, it's all just, the world is just full of ridiculousness. So, what can you do? But in the meantime, while we still can eat regular food and we all haven't died of monkeypox or salmonella, let's go ahead and continue on with the poetry. So, up next we have The Path to Transgression by Stelina, and we have a recording for that, and all right, where's that? Here we go.
The path to transgression is a slippery slope, beginning with innocence and childlike hope. Fooling ourselves with, where's the harm? Excuses on our conscience are like a soothing balm. Protesting too much, assuring an unimpeachable intention, which soon becomes an area of heated contention, as others accuse, while you emphatically refute that your stain is reputation, could be dissolute. The temptation to flirt with pleasure grows each day, until, securely hooked, incapable of turning away, it's too late to turn back. The road beckons, no choice but to follow that captivating, charismatic voice. Too late for regrets, you have wandered in too deep, the object of your desire sneaking in to steal your sleep. With want outweighed guilt, never to be abated, for your need is now craving, which is rarely sated.
Great read, Stelina. Thank you very much to the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Jeremy, what you got? What do you think?
Yeah, I really like the message in this. And I think the prompt is really well carried into the message of this poem. All things truly wicked start from innocence. And I think that's true. Inherently, I don't think that most people are wicked or evil, even when they do something wrong. I think it's a slippery slope in which an act is taken without really thinking of the consequence, and you slide into something that becomes something greater or much more offensive than was ever intended, just because of a whim or some kind of impulse to do something that had much greater consequences to it. And I think that feeling of this is definitely carried in the poem, and I think there's a hint of sexual undertones with all of the poem in what it was saying and what this transgression was ultimately spurred upon. So I like the message. I think it's very well conveyed in this poem.
Great comment. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you're up.
All right. Yeah, I did like how Jeremy mentioned the kind of the hint of sensuality. I felt like there was like could work for like any sort of addiction or, you know, bad habit that you get into. The temptation to flirt with pleasure grows every day until securely hooked, incapable of turning away. I thought that worked well for the whole idea of having an affair, but perhaps the whole idea of going into getting caught up in drugs, drinking, whatever it is that your addiction becomes, whether it's a person or something else. I think there's a kind of a openness to that. Let's see, what else? Protesting too much, assuring unimpeachable intention, which soon becomes an area of heated contention. I like those lines. To me, that's that whole idea of when somebody says too much, you know, like too often, I would never do that. Like when it becomes a blanketed statement, when they put themselves in a box. You know, to me, it's that whole idea of when you judge somebody else for their sins, and you're not willing to realize that you're just as weak and just as human as they are, and that we all at one point or another give into a sort of temptation. And, you know, this really great write and great take on the prompt. Very well done.
Well said, Dan. Thank you. I like the evolution in this. It's a nice little slow roll, so to speak. Past transgression is a slippery slope, beginning with innocence and childlike hope, filling ourselves with where's the harm? Excuses on our conscience are like a soothing balm. There's the introduction. And from there, it just gets a little bit more with each stanza. There's that note of a rolling stone gathers no moss. That's true. But a rolling stone also crashes through that which it runs into. So that second stanza was one that caught me, where I thought Jeremy offered up the sexual intonation. Protesting too much, assuring unimpeachable intention, which soon becomes an area of heated contention, as others accuse while you emphatically refute that your stainless reputation could be dissolute. You could walk that a couple of ways, but there's an easy thought of, especially with that unimpeachable intention. The only thought I can think of it is sexual congress or stealing someone else's work and using it as your own. Plagiarism would be the only other thought I get out of that. But then again, third, she opens up the third one with temptation to float with pleasure grows each day. So I go right back to Jeremy's original thought. There's some sexual intonation here, and that charismatic voice and that thought that you hooked on. And that last stance kind of finishes it. It's too late to have regrets. You're in the deep end now, and you have to either sink or swim. Nicely done, Selena. Thank you. All right, Pam, back to you.
Great comment there, Rex. I like the way you mentioned the idea of a possibility being, you know, plagiarism. I thought that was a great observation.
I think
right.
The only other thing that actually makes sense. But even that kind of sits on weak legs.
Absolutely. All right. And up next we have Once Wicked, Always Wicked by Diane D. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Born Wicked by Diane D. I wept fury, a steady trickle of crimson, flowing like a weeping redbud in winter. Pockmarks dimpled my polished cheeks. Misery seeped from dry pleated cracks, dripping waxy skin like the candelabra. I threaded a needle to darn the hole that you left in the middle of my gin and tonic, tasting very like a whiskey and cooking oil, while watching a once master pettifogger dancing falderal between earth and sky. If people were rain, you were the storm. I feared you as I did my mother's silence. Crimson waned with the scent of cologne. When the moon yawned it so long, I knew on which side of innocence you saw wicked. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, you get the first.
All right. Well, I have to say that was definitely a great read. And, I like the word pettifogger, which, of course, I did not know what it meant. But
yes.
I see that. I was looking it up. Quibble about petty points. Someone who quibbles about petty points. So very cool there. I liked learning a new word. As always, you know, there's Diane has this way of writing, formatting her poems in a very smooth line type way, to where even if they don't rhyme, they flow as if they rhyme, and they set really nicely. I really have always, as I've said before, I've always enjoyed imagery and metaphors that have to do with sewing and quilting. I threaded a needle to darn the hole that you left in the middle of my gin and tonic, tasting very like a whiskey and cooking oil, while watching a once master pettifogger dancing folderol between earth and sky. You know, there's some people just, they know how to pick fights. They know how to, you know, pick over the little things that they should learn to let go, but they can't. And it's all because they want to see you get riled up. I did like the imagery, the metaphor of threading a needle to darn the hole. You know, that whole idea of, you know, that idea of, you know, just feeling like you always have to be the one to fix everything, you know, that everything is your responsibility. If people were rain, you were the storm. I feared you as I did my mother's silence. You know, I like that she brings that up, that the silence, you know, because sometimes silence feels more like judgment than actual yelling anger. Like, you'd almost rather have the person yell at you and know what they're feeling than to feel like they just will never talk to you again. And I think that she brings mother in there with a particularly powerful part, because it shows the idea of dealing with that kind of treatment since childhood. So excellent write and very well done.
Very much, Pam. And Jeremy, how about you?
Yeah, great comments, Pam. And before I forget this thought on what you just said, I like the fact that you like the metaphor of sewing or knitting and how it relates to poetry, because of the deliberateness of it and the repetition of it and the concentration with it. I think it's a really cool thought, and I like how you picked up on that. And when you were saying that, I think that there's definitely a in the artistic styles of both, I think there is kind of a connection to it. So the fact that you're drawn from one to the other that you celebrate so much is kind of a neat connection. I also like, in terms of what you said, in terms of Diane's style, I really picked up on that second, because there are some great lines and the whole composition of the whole thing. Pam, when you said that she has a way of making things sound like they flow and they rhyme when really they don't, but it always fits so well. Yeah, that's the talent that I really picked up in the second. Tasting very like a whiskey and cooking oil. And the way she performed that line, I wouldn't have picked up on the deliberateness of it and how well that line works. And then obviously the line that you said, the words that you said later, master pettifogger, dancing, folderoy, federal. I can't even read it after I've sat here and practiced it. I think those lines were really cool and how it all sounded. It's not a tongue twister, but it works so lyrically beautifully in all of it. So I thought the artistry of what Diane put together was really astounding. What I liked in the first was the intensity. I wept fury, a steady trickle of crimson. So right out of the gate, she's crying blood. And the pain that is carried from the very beginning of this poem is true throughout. So on many levels, Diane put together a really intense but a very beautiful poem.
Absolutely. There's an accusatory note in this. That first one, it does, it walks within the sort of a touch of innocence, especially with the language, dripping waxy skin like the candelabra, dimpled, polished cheeks, little youthful, weeping red bud in winter. That second stanza, I thought that was pretty good. And then the last line, while watching a once master pettifogger dancing falder all between earth and sky, that hits on notice, a master weaver of words, one who can muster up a story. But that's not here in this one. There's that last line, on which side of innocent you saw wicked. So there is a thought that comes, especially with mom's silence, that dad has laid down some kind of huge thought, law, rule, and it seems that there's an accusation of transgression that walks within this piece. And that's where the I wept furious, did trickle of crimson at that opening line. And then the thought of I feared you as I did my mother's silence. So there is that notion of it is disappointment on both ends, from the child's perspective to the parents, and the parents in the moment, mom being silent, and dad opening up with what used to be nicely matriculated language now is a firestorm, which is burning bright within her reddened cheeks. So, nicely done there, Diane. Thank you.
Yeah, Rex, I like that a lot because I saw that as and what you said at the beginning of how that there's definitely blame to it. But the fact that you took the blame as multifaceted or multi-sided is an angle I didn't even see. So really cool comment.
Well, thank you very much. Oh, Delina's in the room.
Yeah, I saw that. That's awesome. That's awesome. It's good to see her. Yeah, you know, I never would have taken that as a multi-layered, multifaceted. So that is really cool there, Rex. I guess
well,
because
that
of the
comes with each family. There comes a time when the kids disappoint the parents and the parents end up disappointing the kids. Sometimes they come all in one foul swoop because that last line, he knew, he looked, he knew what she knew on which side of innocent that he saw the wicked. And it came with something that was not heard of from him usually.
Mhm. That makes sense. We often find the worst of ourselves in our children, but thankfully there are times when we also see plenty of times where we see the best of ourselves. You know, so. And
All right.
Up next we have Hemingway Hijacked My Calligraphy by Pretty Bird. And we have a recording. We
Pretty
have
Bird
a recording.
Actually made a soundtrack? Damn.
Yes. So here we go.
Hemingway Hijacked My Calligraphy by Pretty Bird. Pens and swords and time heals all, but life isn't a sitcom that resolves in 24 and a half minutes. The blood in my ink coagulates on regurgitated words that burn truth into the lies they spun out of denial, all the while looking for the spirit to calm the witch or the devil that wants his due, but what has he done but spit in my eye? Words evaporate before hitting the page, and I squeeze the bladder that pours through the tip that was meant to show me inside out. It showers me in acid rain sprays that try to bleach me into position, but I cannot contort into anything but my lazy, nonconformist ways. Liquid courage, liquid treasure, liquid pleasure, liquid hangover afternoons that taste like I ate carcass as my last meal. There isn't enough alcohol to blind me to the reflection of flayed emotion I leave in my wake at every sunrise curtain call. My murderous eyes paint time in lines that cackle and frowns that carry too generous amounts of pain, disdain, and disappointment. Verses turn fragmented lies and bad grammar in words that pretend to be sentences with no structure, I dig the fountain pen through the paper of my eyes, hoping this time the words will stick and someone, somewhere, will hear them scream. Clawing through my cheeks, bleeding lines and truth that looks like bad stitches and a puke bucket by the bed. My tongue slices in rusty blades where tetanus would be a reprieve from the truth I sling like ninja stars. Unseen. I read Hemingway and hate it, but it turns up in my broken thoughts and inability to escape broken perception. I read Bukowski and flip off the world and fireball of Patron. Yes, tonight it is the Patron in chrome that soothes the soul, if not quiets the mind. But if my pen bleeds invisible words, and I forgot how to write through all the typing, then how am I to say screw you in intelligible gibberish? Farewell, inkwell blues, and hello, black lines of misconstrued regret and angles that make me remember I forgot how to use a protractor. The light above the reading chair flickers on, and the open bottle remains, so one shot to 15, but who's counting by yourself? Hand lettering my love in calligraphy on a heart requires to pass by feelings and slow waves weighed down by a shot glass, blurring fragments into truth.
Great read, Pretty Bird. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Jeremy, what do you think?
I think that was an incredible performance. I really, really, really enjoyed that. I liked how naturally it flowed. When we all try to do justice to these poems that we read, I love it when poets submit their own work and know what's coming and are able to convey the feeling to such an exquisite degree that what we just heard. That was a great poem. When I would have interpreted this as more rigid couplets, I like how this flowed from one to the next in thought and feeling, and how Pretty Bird really conveyed this poem. In terms of the content, the title says it all. Hemingway hijacked my calligraphy. So what I interpreted in this poem was the self-doubt in writing or creating the artwork, jealousy in seeing someone else doing something that one's own self-doubt prevents them from creating, and then alcohol being that vehicle that kind of lets them be free and lets all inhibitions throw caution to the wind and create something that they're proud of. But what was really cool on a lot of this is how there's this, and I think I do it, I don't know that everybody does it, but this feeling of rating oneself or judging oneself in their artwork compared to others. I read Hemingway and hate that it burns to turn my broken thoughts and inability to escape broken perception. And then immediately going over to Bukowski and his style and what he does and how he's able to speak so bluntly, and it seems to be alcohol fueled. And so looking to alcohol as being that freeing vehicle to get the words out or to get the artwork out to a degree at which someone can have self-worth or be able to not judge one's own work as being less than, seems to be a crutch that is, it's unfortunate that someone has to look to that, but I think it's also encouraging that someone can find a freeing vehicle to get out what they want to do. So on a lot of levels, I really enjoyed this. I think Pretty Bird put together a really, really cool poem.
Great comment, Jeremy. Thank you. All right, Pam, what about you? Unmute.
Yes, there you go. but yeah, I really enjoyed this. It's great to have a SoundCloud and a poem by Pretty Bird. Obviously, this was originally written for a Partner Part Saint contest by Efeziana to the picture prompt, but it fits obviously so very well for tonight's show. And I liked how Jeremy mentioned that, you know, she brings in, I read Hemingway and hate it, but it turns up in my broken thoughts and ability to escape. And then going on to the thought of reading Bukowski, you know, as always, she's got just powerful imagery and metaphors wonderful, like, emotive lines. And to me, the general theme of this seems to be about wanting to make your pain, wanting to make your desires understood. And what I like about this is she brings in she brings in the little parts of, like, the Hemingway quotes, like, the blood in my ink coagulates on regurgitated words. You know, there's very much a couple of Hemingway quotes within those lines alone. The murderous eyes paint time in lines that cackle and frown, that carry two generous amounts of pain, disdain, and disappointment. You know, to me, it just really hits hard in that whole idea of how we so oftentimes feel like that we've become a disappointment to other people. Just a really strong write and very well done.
Great comment, Sutra. I get there's a touch of I'll go with humor in that opening. Pens and swords and time heals all, but life isn't a sitcom that resolves in 24 and a half minutes. That's a nice little humorous opening. All the while looking for the spirits to calm the witch or the devil that wants us to, but what has he done to spit in my eye? There's a nice note, actually. Have I signed some deal with the devil, so to speak, and I'm not getting anything out of it? And there's also in that turn of that line there, the sort of, the muse ain't working at this point in time. And liquid courage, liquid treasure, liquid pleasure, liquid hangover afternoon that tastes like a carcass as my last meal. I like that line because there's a deliberate note of using carcass. It hits at the sort of Bukowski later on. Liquid hangover afternoon that tastes like I ate park ass as my last meal. A nice little, I don't know if that was intentional or just a passing look on my part. My murderous eyes, paint time and lines, the cackling frowns that carry two generous amounts of pain, disdain, and disappointment. That comes with looking at oneself and what their thoughts. Because then you hit on those double lines of Hemingway and Bukowski, and there's that want and need in avenues of thought that not failing in your own mind because you don't see yourself as that thick-tongued or effusive in the moment, but you offer up lines such as my tongue sliced in rusty blade where tetanus would be reprieved from the truth I sling like ninja stars unseen. And then one pouring through my cheeks, bleeding lines of truth that looks like bad stitches and a puke bucket by the bed. But there's some great metaphorical lines in there. There's another one right after that, Bukowski. But if my pen bleeds invisible words and I forget how to write through all the typing, then how am I to say screw you in intelligent or gibberish? That's a nice paint to both Hemingway and Bukowski right there in a moment. And let's see. And the last one is there is that notation between the one and the 15, the shot, the booze, whether it's the phone or fireball or whatever. It's the ease of liquid unbending the knot in one's mind on the tip of the tongue.
Great comment, Rex.
Well, back to you. Where would you like to go?
All right. Up next, we have Fiction by Gerald Green, and we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Fiction, written and read by Gerald Green. I write from inspiration's muse on topics wide of someone's pain, imparting thoughts of what I see, not for glory, not for gain, but emphasizing with a pen the good, the bad, the modicum of life, and all its twisted turns I deign to call a daily scrum. It's not my blood. I write of those dependent on another's personality who try but cannot break away from some destructive tendency. They veer through life without a plan, without ability to steer, thus hitting what obstructs their way, conveying injury and fear. It's not my blood. I make believe as if it's real, a made-up scene that's fictional, to make a point and underscore, a torrid scene that's mythical. And yet, somewhere, somehow it seems the point comes home. The mark is hit, and readers realize a truth that feels appropriate, befit. It's not my blood. Protagonists sometimes will die, and passion lovers turn to hate. The strong might lose abilities depending on a fractured fate. It's all a jumble, jungled words to entertain, conveying thought without concern for aftermath, or what some made-up life has wrought. It's not my blood.
Great read, Gerald. Thank you very much for the soundcraft. It is greatly appreciated. And Gerald, so there is nothing to writing. All you do is sit at a typewriter and read. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, I like how the stanzas are broken up with that repetitive line, it's not my blood. You know, and I think the one-word title fiction was just absolutely perfect. And he offers up the idea that, you know, he shares with us, like writers oftentimes share stories of fiction, not only for the purpose of entertainment, but also for the purpose of inspiring people, for the purpose of telling a story. Because, you know, oftentimes there's what do they say? There's truth. A little bit of truth in every fiction or something like that. I think I'm slightly paraphrasing, but the idea being there. And I really like, I write of those dependent on another's personality who try but cannot break away from some destructive tendency. They veer through life without a plan, without ability to steer, thus hitting what obstructs their way, conveying injury and fear. The line I write, I really like those lines all the way through, but the one I write of those dependent on another's personality reminds me of how, like, when you open up a book of fiction, how, you know, there's always that little saying about how, you know, it's how it's a coincidence if it reminds you of anybody real or you know, that they're all made up. I also like the use of the word protagonist. Protagonists sometimes will die and passion lovers turn to hate. The strong might lose abilities depending on a fractured fate. And I really like how this, to me, speaks on the idea of how much power an author has to create life, to take away life. There's almost like that almost godlike power of being an author and creating a world all your own where you decide who lives and who dies, who's going to have the personalities that people like the best. You know, so just a really clever write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Dan. And Jeremy, how about you?
Again, I really appreciate the SoundCloud because I think it emphasized the progression of what I was feeling in this poem. From the beginning, the repetitive line of it's not my blood in the beginning was very disassociative with it's not my blood. And then by the end, how he ended the poem, it was more kind of a self-convincing or a self-affirming it's not my blood. And I think it was showing how I interpreted the poem in the fiction. In what Pam had said, there's a lot of truth in fiction and what someone writes. And I feel like what he's trying to say is everything that is conveyed is out of his imagination, but it becomes autobiographical. I really like where I got that hint the most was in the stanza where it says, and yet somewhere, somehow it seems that the point comes, the mark is hit. The feels appropriate, a fit. He becomes part of this fiction that he's writing, and it becomes more true and more true to his own course or his own path. And so I liked it. I liked it as how this fiction was kind of drawing him in. He was becoming more and more part of the world of what he was trying to create. And I like that creative process of that insight into one's own pen. And it was, again, best emphasized by the performance in the poem. Really cool.
Great comment. As to your thought, Pam, there is truth in fiction. That is a note, a line, a quote. And it is the use of a lie and the telling of the story to push forth a human truth. And the idea in this is it does come from the body of thought, from the inspirations muse, on top is white as someone's pain, imparting thoughts of what I see, not for glory, not for gain. It hits on the note. That's why people offer up books. It is for a bit of glory. It is for a bit of gain. And it might start out as a modicum of truth with the fact that, yeah, I just want to express myself. But as they get a little more involved, they get a little bit more headway in what they're putting the page and how they're being perceived, that does grow. So the whole thing walks on that truth of it is his blood, so to speak. It might not start out that way, but in the long run, it does end up being that, because the truth in the whole thing is in the story, the content, the idea. That little lie you push forth as fiction speaks of the human truth that, it's just a story I'm offering up. Yes, it offers up things, like Jeremy just said, that thought would be fit. It hits the mark with people as they read it, and it gets incorporated into a nuance of sociality. And all of a sudden, that moment of truth, as it is your blood, just as the glory and the gain you get from shedding that blood. Just a thought. All right, Dan, back to you.
All right. Well said there, Rex. Cool comment. All right. And up next,
well,
we have...
Well,
let me
fact checked on that.
I think
he gave a verbatim quote, and I want someone to hit rewind and make sure that he got it exactly right. That's my fact check.
Well, check the line. There is truth in fiction.
www.checktherex.com. I'm heading there now. All right. Up next, we have Forget the Typewriter, Just Drink the Rum by Flower Muse. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Forget the Typewriter, Just Drink the Rum by Flower Muse. He was right. There is nothing to writing, though sometimes you have to do a little more than just sitting in front of a cold typewriter, drinking the Kool-Aid, watching the structure of a cobweb being built while visiting the bottom of one or two rum bottles. Imagine just sitting there until your imagination starts its trip from monochrome amnesia, travels through the gutterways to visit the blood moon during the May eclipse, and you need to keep away from San Francisco. The summers there are colder than a witch's derriere, and you won't like to climb up to the stars. Taking a cable car only gets you halfway there. But we're getting away from our original design of writing and trying to make sense at the same time. And if anyone told you that we are masters of our craft, then I am be happy to tell you the Golden Gate and throw in a dozen Cuban cigars free of charge. The truth is, we believe that much is true. We prostitute our souls for just another hit, a simple syllable that will strike the page that flames, start the journey to that place called Neverland, east of the equator, and two stars to the right. As for Hemingway, he had his turn and made clever use of it. Now it's up to you and me to take on the quill and run until our feet bleed and we made our deadline. And boom. All right, Jeremy. What do you think?
Great read, Rex. That was awesome. Really well done. I like all the mentions of San Francisco, because that made me kind of with the subject of this. It made me think of the beat writers and how they just kind of got lost in their Ginsberg nonsensical whiskey driven, rum driven rights that you just kind of fell in love with, or I still fall in love with. And so that was kind of the spirit that I got from all of this. Again, it was inspirational. I like how there's a nod to Hemingway and it says he made a clever use of it, but it's saying, hey, it's not over. Still enjoy the craft, still enjoy the art. Whatever vehicle you need to make it happen, make it happen. So I think it's another inspirational write based upon what we've been talking about tonight. I really enjoyed what Flower Muse put together.
Good day, Jeremy. Thank you. Pam, what you got?
Oh, great read there. You know, I really like how this speaks at the end about us being that next generation, that it's our turn to, take on that quill and run until our feet bleed and we made our deadline. That was just a perfect ending. I too really like the references to the San Francisco, the Golden Gate. And if anyone told you that we are masters of our craft, then I'll be happy to sell you the Golden Gate and throw in a dozen Cuban cigars free of charge. I thought it was great that he mentioned the Cuban cigars, since, you know, wasn't Hemingway a big cigar smoker, if I remember right?
And he had a place in Cuba, too, at one point. Used to make that trip over. It's only 90 miles.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was really clever there. And, you know, but great imagery and metaphors, some really nice humor in this. The summers there are colder than a witch's derriere, and you won't like to climb up to the stars. Taking cable car only gets you halfway there. There's a real sense of how life just falls apart, and you never quite, like to me, that whole idea works as a metaphor for people who go to California in hopes of getting their big dreams fulfilled of becoming a star, you know, and just doesn't quite work out as planned. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Kind of hits in the middle there. What I was sitting on that last piece, we just did. The truth is, we bleed. That much is true. That was kind of funny. I read that. Oh, damn. Okay. I just came off of that one. But he does hit on right above that. And if anyone told you that we are masters of our craft, then I'll be happy to sell you the Golden Gate and throw in a dozen Cuban cigars for free. I've also got swampland in Florida that's great for building houses on. How about that for two? So there's a note. Ease does not come without the thought of paying penance. And like you said, Pam, that's what with the actual Hemingway, he had his turn and made clever use of it. Now it's up to you and they take on the quill and run until our feet bleed and we make our deadline. Again, that deadline angle had me thinking of Hunter S. Thompson and his number of wells putting out his pieces. And again, that thought to running until our feet bleed comes right back to that. Truth is, we bleed. That much is true. And it also reminded me of something I had hit on. And when the hell was that? That was a long time ago. He thought of Hemingway, a life lived, loved impeccably, and wrote within the canons of buckshot banality. behavioral analysis aside, when one's offerings become an obscure and non-enticing stanchion rather than the black beams elongated, emoted, and barted within a grog's fine silhouette, maybe one should leave the ice cubes on the floor. All right, I'll come
like
back
that.
To you.
All right, well, I'm not going to try to have us force in another right. We'll do carryovers next week. I'm going to have us mention, I'll mention upcoming contests that I have, and you can mention upcoming contests that you have and then wrap up the show. So I have two contests that need rights. One is for next week's After Midnight, which is San Francisco Poets of the San Francisco Renaissance. And then for Break On Through, I have the artwork of, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this, Frederick Vordenberga Gildevart. And, you know, so make sure people to check those out if you get a chance. And anything that didn't get read tonight will get read at the beginning of next week's After Midnight show. And what do you got coming up, Rex?
Let's see. We've got The Artist Production on Wednesday, which is the Black Lace Noir. Oh, Black Lace Jazz, Black Lace and Jazz Smoky Voice. Got some pictures and some lines. Mix and match the lines with the pictures, or do it any way you like. Take a picture, take a line. And Sunday, we've got Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds as the surreal notes to dig into.
Very cool. Those both sound like really, they're going to be great shows, great contests. I'm looking forward to those.
Yeah, Wednesday's going to be pretty cool because that's a little different on the artist induction.
Yeah, I like it. Different is good.
Well,
all right, well, great show tonight, Lynn.
Yes, it was. Thank you very much, Pam. And Jeremy, thanks for sitting in. Stelina, thank you for the boards. Rick, thank you for the comments and the board. And who did I miss? We have some. There was somebody else on the board earlier. I can't remember.
Well, Jeremy was on the board until he called in. Maybe that's who you're thinking of.
Well, I could be. We'll see you all next week. Come join us tomorrow. What's going on Tuesday for Twisted tomorrow? Today for Twisted Tuesday.
Oh, let's see. Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters and maybe a Twisted Mister too. Naomi ran a contest with a bunch of different pictures, artwork of doors for people to write to. So it should be a great show. Make sure to join us. Poetry readers and commenters, always welcome.
Cool. All right, gang. We'll see you next week or later.